Welcome to today's Indiana Chamber of Commerce Policy Issue Conference Call, hosted by Mr. Tom Schuman. During the presentation, all lines will be in a listen-only mode. If you have a question at any point during today's presentation, please press 01. Again, to ask a question, press 01 at any time. Thank you for your attention. I would now like to turn the conference over to your host, Mr. Tom Schuman.
Thank you and good morning, everyone. I am Tom Schuman, Senior Vice President of Communications with the Indiana Chamber. Last month, we talked with Jim McClellan, focusing on the opioid epidemic and some of the efforts taking place to combat that. Today, we're going to expand the healthcare discussion, how it's impacting our workplaces and our communities a little bit broader. We're going to talk about the Alliance for a Healthier Indiana, both its initial efforts and its priorities moving forward. Our members, of course, listen in via phone each month, and many of our guests also participate over the phone lines. We were planning to have both our guests in person today, but traffic took control here in central Indiana. Number of accidents on the interstates. So Brian Mills, President and CEO of Community Health, is joining us on the phone. Welcome, Brian.
Thanks, Tom. Glad to be here.
And Kevin Brinegar, our Chamber President and CEO, will be joining us in just a few minutes here in our office. Both are among the founding members of organizations that founded the Alliance for a Healthier Indiana. And a reminder as we begin our discussion, listeners and members on the phone, you can weigh in at any time. Simply hit 01 to ask a question or comment. Brian, it was just about 1 year ago when the Alliance for a Healthier Indiana was officially introduced. You were also board chair of the Indiana Hospital Association at the time. If you would, talk about some of the factors that led you and others to bring this group together and tackle these challenges from a group perspective.
Tom, first of all, thanks for this opportunity to participate this morning. It's interesting on that question. It really goes back to 2 years. It's about 2 years today when I was asked to assume the role as the chairman of the hospital association, and it just so happened that same day that I was going to accept that, the health rankings came out for the country, and once again you look at these reports and Indiana stood out as one of the poorest health states any way you slice and dice it. So I basically just said, on kind of a whim, I'm going to use this as a platform and challenge my peers when I was given the opportunity to give kind of an acceptance remarks. And I just challenged my peers to say, hey, we can't fix this on our own, but I would challenge each of us to not look at our shoes and let this blow over and to take a responsibility for trying to convene others to take on this issue and work to improve the health of our citizens. I was surprised that evening there were a couple hundred people in the room. By noon the next day, I'd heard from virtually every hospital president in the state saying, I'm supportive. So from there, the first person actually, coincidentally, I reached out to was Kevin and just said, Kevin, I'd like to meet with you. I wanted to get the chamber involved, the State Medical Association involved. They quickly came on board. I looked to the IU School of Public Health as well, and Dr. Halverson came on board, talked to Rob Hillman at Anthem. They quickly came on board, and this whole thing really took shape in a very short period of time. And so it was more of a coincidence, and I thought being in an opportunity to be in leadership, sometimes you got to see, can we change agendas based upon the positions we're asked to be in? So that's there was not a whole lot of other thought related to that. However, we have gained a lot of support since then.
Well, it's interesting, Brian. As you said, people in your position, your colleagues around the state, there are a number of issues regarding our healthcare system and your positions of operating hospitals. To have your colleagues support that effort right off the bat is tremendous and obviously ties right into the missions of your organizations. Kevin has joined us. Kevin, I informed the audience about the traffic travails out there this morning, so you managed to make it in. Brian mentioned reaching out to you, and the Chamber has obviously advocated on healthcare issues for many years at the state and federal levels. Policy victories will continue to be important. But talk about some of the efforts outside the State House and why it was important for the Chamber representing the business community to be part of this alliance.
Well, it was a natural fit for the Chamber, largely because of our Indiana Vision 2025 plan, which is our long-range economic development action plan for the state of Indiana. And in that plan, under the attractive business climate driver, are two goals related to reducing our incidence of smoking, and both in terms of the raw number and improving our rank relative to other states, and improving our obesity levels. In hindsight, back in 2012, we probably should have added an opioid goal as well, but you know, we had goals and desires with respect to two of the three areas that the Alliance has chosen to focus on, and obviously the Chamber's gotten very involved in the opioid issue as well. And so this was a way, as we do on many big issues, we do things in coalitions, and you know, when Brian approached me, here was going to be a ready-made coalition to address some issue areas that were tied directly to our Indiana Vision 2025, and made, you know, perfect sense to lock arms and use each other's research and data and talents to put forth a public policy agenda.
Brian, Kevin mentioned a couple of the priorities that the Alliance established. Talk about the group's decision-making to focus first on smoking and why that one elevated maybe to the top of the list, at least initially.
Sure, Tom. We did consider a lot of things, and I'll be glad to share those, if you wish, of other issues that we need to address. And all of those are still in our hopper, if you will, and we know we need to make progress on a number of things. However, as you look at the information, the smoking piece of it is, I'm using this word a little liberally, but the easiest and the most well-documented of what you have to do. And there's all kinds of data that shows that, one, price is a big piece of it. Obviously, that comes through taxation. That's always a difficult word for people. But price is something that does work. And so, therefore, we were looking for something that we could start with, that we could have a proven model to address it. And then secondarily, the issues related to smoking are evident in so many different areas, you know, whether it's the incidence of lung cancer or the incidence of heart disease, or get into the workplace and we could deal with absenteeism and productivity and overall cost to healthcare. We saw it as being something that was pervasive, yet something that was realistic, and we just said, hey, that's the place to start. So that's why we chose smoking.
And just one other demonstration of the impact of smoking, I just came across something recently. A group out of Washington put out a report, identified Indiana as one of 12 contiguous states. So by contiguous, we're including Ohio, Michigan, West Virginia, Kentucky, Tennessee, and some other southern states. It indicated those 12 states together, if they were a nation, it would rank fifth among all the countries in the world with the highest smoking rates. So again, it's just it's one example of the fact of the smoking rates. Kevin, if you would, we
hey,
spent a lot of time on our...
Hey, Tom. Tom, on that
yes.
topic, I mean, just this that report, I'm aware of it, but it labeled us, you rattled off the states, but it labeled us as part of smoking nation. Tobacco nation.
Vaccination.
Yeah, and that's quite a, I mean, that's a reference that I'd just assume we not be part of.
Well, absolutely, and it kind of says to the outside world if you're going to think about locating or growing a business here, you're likely to have higher healthcare costs.
Yeah, we talk about the business climate here in our state so much, and so many efforts have been put into making a tremendous tax climate and a great regulatory climate at the state level. To have that moniker potentially out there is just so detrimental to the business attraction efforts.
Not to mention the data that we received as we were formulating the alliance that showed and estimated that smoking costs businesses in Indiana $3.2 billion a year in absenteeism, lost wages, lost productivity, and another $2.9 billion a year in additional health care costs above and beyond non-smokers.
So some of those facts, we talked about those early this year during our policy calls when we were updating our members on what was taking place during the legislative session. Those numbers that Kevin just said, do they sink in? Do they help get the message across as we're talking with, whether it's legislators, whether it's community leaders? Do those have an impact on people when they hear those numbers? Kevin?
They do, although some of our policy solutions were new and bold and maybe a little more than the General Assembly was ready to swallow at this point, particularly the cigarette tax increase being proposed in a year where there was major transportation infrastructure funding being enacted and, you know, a first-year governor, and it just seemed a bridge too far to say, okay, you know, we're going to raise $1.2 billion in revenues for roads, and now you want us to vote on another revenue increase or tax increase for smoking purposes. And Brian and I, we were even together in a meeting with the governor during session, and legislators, that they just weren't quite ready for that, it seemed. And then the idea of raising the legal age of smoking was very new. Only two states had done it to that point, and they were Hawaii and California, and being sort of a conservative Midwest state, it was a hard sell, as we found out, to say, hey, let's join Hawaii and California and be the third state to do this. But fortunately, there's some other red states that have passed this legislation over the summer, and hopefully that's an indication that there is momentum building for this as a way to reduce the incidence of young people beginning to smoke and then getting hooked and ending up smoking throughout their lives.
Brian, could you add to that, talk about some of the, they really started with four planks in the legislative plan, talk about some of the other efforts leading into this 2017 legislative session?
Yeah, and I'll start as a continuation of Kevin's comments about Tobacco 21, which is the whole initiative to increase the legal age to 21. And as Kevin stated, there were two states as of this time last year. There's now five states that have passed that. But in addition to that, there's more than 200 cities in 17 states that have raised the smoking age to 21 in their area. So it's not statewide, but it's, you know, it's citywide or countywide. So there is a movement afoot, and again, there's a lot of information that supports the fact that the number of youth that start smoking, you know, before they're 21 is really high. 95% of all smokers start before they're 21. And in our state, we believe that there's over 4,000 18 or under who begin smoking each year. So there's a lot of evidence, and especially when you get into the development of the brain and the ability to make, you know, logical decisions. I mean, all that happens as well as you know, who people 18 befriend and the supply. So there's a lot of information there that I could go on about as well. But that's an initiative, and as Kevin said, that was somewhat of a shocker in the legislature that we would even consider or propose that. But that was one. Increasing the cigarette tax was the second, and it was to add $1.50 to the price of cigarettes. we did some research, Tom, as well, and went and identified, is it true that high smoking rates or taxes have lower use of tobacco and lower heart disease, lower lung cancer? And the data proves out very linear. It does. And just like in our situation where you have a low smoking cigarette tax, we're the 14th lowest in the country, that we accordingly have really high rates of smoking, the 12th highest in the country, and we have very high rates of lung cancer and heart disease, and they're around the, both around the 10th highest in the country. So that's where you get Kevin's comments about the cost of healthcare. I understand this information, but I also ratify that that's true, and it is directly related back to the incidence of smoking.
So those were two levels.
Yeah, I was going to say, before you continue, I just want to point out to our listeners, you talk about the initial proposal, $1.50 per pack tax increase. The current tax rate is just under $1. And it was 99.5 cents. And also, there's some pretty good information that the level of a tax increase is important, that a smaller increase would not maybe have that desired effect. Is that accurate?
That's very accurate. I mean, there were some proposals pushed around last year in the legislature to do something at 50 or 60 cents. We were actually advocating against that because we do know that that would not change the incidence of smoking. And, again, we've got data that shows unless you get it to a point that can't be offset by rebates and what have you, that it will have no impact on the rate of smoking. So we saw $1.50, and our evidence showed that $1.50 was the right number, and it wasn't something we just artificially came up with, but that was something that was proven to, over time, reduce the rate. And again, we're at 21%, and some would say, hey, that's down. That is true, but the national average is 15. And there's 20-plus states that are 15 or less. As well, we keep trending the wrong way, even though our numbers have improved.
Brian makes an important point of smaller tax increase not being effective because we had information and evidence to show that if the General Assembly had gone that route, that the tobacco companies have enough resources that they would have rebated and lowered their price to the retailers enough to reduce the retail price so that the person purchasing cigarettes wouldn't feel the full impact, if any impact, of that 50-cent tax increase. But it was only when you raise the tax enough that it's so high that they can't do that you have the desired effect at the sales counter.
Brian, I'll let you get back to that. We've talked about the tax increase and the proposal to raise the minimum age to 21. You were going to mention the other parts of the proposal.
Yeah, the other two pieces. One, I think is very apropos for this conversation. It was just the eliminate this preferential treatment for smokers in the workplace. And that's something that the Chamber has long said. This doesn't make any sense that the smokers have, you know, rights. Specific rights within the workplace, and it also limits the ability of all of us as employers to address these issues or to, at the same time, encourage and incent people to, go through and no longer utilize cigarettes. And so the idea of us having ways in which we can have different premiums for those who smoke or don't smoke or other ideas that we have to encourage and provide smoking cessation that leads to, again, additional incentives. Because when it's all said and done, we're trying to do the right things for our employees. At the same time, we do know, as Kevin stated previously, we do know that does result in an additional cost, both direct health care costs and also costs related to productivity or lack thereof or loss of, as well as absenteeism. So that one, again, continues to be one. And I've been surprised on that one as I've talked to many, many groups that very few people even understand that are even aware that that's in existence. So I still think that's a big one that's out there. And then the final one was to just to increase the amount of funding that we have for public health. Our public health funding in the state, in the as it compares to the country, we're 49th out of 50 states in our funding of public health. So the idea that we have in, you know, throughout urban and rural Indiana, resources to help address this, we just don't. And so there was some additional dollars provided. There was $5 million provided previously. Another $2.5 million was provided through the legislature last year. So that's a little bit of money. But the dollars that one would see on a comparable other states are more in the $50 million range. So there's a huge delta.
And then you go back with all the tobacco settlements and the dollars provided there. You know, previously, years ago, we had a whole lot more money from that settlement dollars going towards these the public health purposes, and those things over time have just been utilized for other purposes, and now we don't have many dollars left. But those were the four initiatives that we were pushing. And as we, Tom, as we go forward for 2018, we're primarily looking at an increase in the tobacco tax. Again, pursuing raising the legal age to 21, and then third, the eliminate the preferential treatment for smokers in the workplace. We believe that the legislature did provide dollars, not a lot of dollars, on the public health piece of it, but we don't see a reason to go back for that in 18.
All right. Kevin, can I get you to add on the discussion about the preferences for in the workplace? You've talked about that quite a bit. Brian mentioned that not a lot of knowledge about it, but that goes back a number of years, doesn't it?
Yeah, it goes back to 1991. It's legislation the tobacco companies pushed through back then, and it really prevents employers from being more engaged in trying to drive a culture of non-smoking in our state and get us out of that group of states that you and Brian talked about earlier. There's also a lot of confusion as to what you can or can't do, and if you have a program, is it the law says you can't treat smokers differently. So effectively, smokers have the same civil rights protection as race, religion, gender, age, ethnicity, and we don't think that smoking rises to that same level of needed protection. And I can give you just one example of the confusion. We were meeting with a member company earlier this month, or excuse me, last month, actually. We're in November now, aren't we? He said, I was talking to the CEO, and he said, yeah, we've got this thing. We charge our smokers more for our health insurance than others. And, you know, I'm thinking that I'm listening to this, and I'm thinking, well, do I tell him that that's illegal, or do I leave him, let him be blissfully ignorant and hope that so he can continue his program and have nobody sue him? And it was a little bit of a conundrum because I knew that, you know, based on the way he described it, you can't do that in Indiana.
Reminder to our members on the phone today from throughout the state, if you want to weigh in with your questions or comments, simply hit 01. That's 01. Brian, another follow-up on one of the 21 age movement that we talked about. You mentioned a number of cities and some additional states. Do you have the information which states have passed that, and what are some of the things about the momentum that's going on behind that initiative?
Tom, in addition to, as Kevin said, Hawaii and California, where we were last year, the other three are New York, Oregon, and Maine. And we believe others are going to follow suit.
Yeah, I believe New Jersey is one as well, because I made a note that that was, unlike Hawaii and California, that was a state with a Republican governor, and that might get more of the attention of our Republican-controlled legislature and administration here in Indiana.
I'll check on that, Kevin. I did not. You're probably right. I did not have New Jersey on my list. So that piece. I mean, you get back to. I mean, a few other facts just on the whole tobacco piece. I mean, I know you said Jim McClellan was on last month, and you know, I think that the governor appointing Jim to oversee this is a wonderful choice, and to profile all the issues we have regarding opioids. And it's a very, very complex situation that I think a lot of us are working really hard to address. One of the things that's interesting is, you know, there are deaths, and those are not taken for granted, but there's this huge increase in the number of deaths related to the opioids. And, you know, those are approximately 1,100 in the recent data we have. The reason I throw that out is to not, you know, at all take issue with our emphasis on the opioids, but on the tobacco piece, the number that we have every year from tobacco-related deaths are tenfold that. I mean, our number's 11,000 a year. And it's just always troubling to me that the 1,100 is something we've got to go fix, and I believe we should for a lot of reasons, but that the 11,000, we just kind of say, well, that's just kind of how it is, and we just accept that we don't have a responsibility there. And then when you put on top of that the fact that you talk to people and they want to quit smoking, you know, when people, it on average takes people almost 10 times of their, this is my New Year's resolution, or I'm going to quit now for whatever reason, it takes them 10 times on average before they finally get there. So this isn't something you just decide you're going to change, and there needs to be a lot of support, and we need, and we do have all kinds of very effective programs to get people involved in, but if we could have the workplace working in cooperation with the state, working in cooperation with, you know, the aging of the brain, I mean, we can do a lot of things here to change that, and again, help our citizens and our state to be more healthy.
Tom, one thing I would add to underscore Brian's point is one of the members of the Alliance, when we were forming our policy agenda, told the story of being in a group and speaking and said, you know, how many of you are smokers? And a number of folks in the audience raised their hand and then asked the question, how many of you want your children to become smokers? And every hand dropped. So, I mean, smokers, by and large, do want to quit. They do understand it's harmful to their health, and they don't want their children to head down that same path.
Brian, I know during the, again, earlier this year during the legislative session, you and other members of the Alliance conducted a number of town halls, different areas of the state, meeting with legislators, meeting with citizens, talking about these issues. I noticed an event coming up next week here in central Indiana focusing on the age of smokers. Can you talk a little bit about that, and are we going to see more of those take place?
Yeah, a couple of comments I'd give you, Tom. One, in prior years, we did have a number of town halls, and obviously people show up for two reasons, one, to support what you're doing, or secondarily, to talk against it. The interesting thing is we didn't have people show up to talk against it. And the polling data says, you know, people are in favor of additional taxes and reduction in the use of tobacco. I mean, that's what our numbers show, you know, by huge margins. So we do believe that we have a groundswell of support for the things that we're trying to do, especially on the cost, on the tax piece of it. Our focus next week at this Alliance, I mean, at this town hall we're having on Wednesday, is really on trying to educate people on the Tobacco 21 piece of it. Because as Kevin and I were saying earlier, that was a surprise to people. It has gotten attention, but people are looking for more information. So we're trying to have a series of town halls to go around and make sure people understand what this is and why we're doing it. And so we've got a group of people talking on Wednesday night. And it is related to this whole education of what's happening. I mean, why decision-making 18 is different than 21? And providing data relative to the incidence of smoking or smoking addiction, you know, post 21 as opposed to pre 21.
In our follow-up after today's call to everybody on the phones today, we'll send information about that Wednesday, November 8th event, 6 to 7:30 p.m. We'll give details for that. We'll also link people to the Alliance website. I'm sure we can look there'll be additional events coming up, different areas of the state where they can come and hear this message. We had a member who emailed a question in along these lines, was asking, their focus was on secondhand smoke. And they had a couple different questions asking about potential, the problem of exposure to minors in vehicles. Apparently some states are working at kind of eliminating that. And also is asking about additional efforts to help in that smoking cessation, even to the lengths of a potential tax credit or something to help people stop smoking. Just wanted to share that information from our member, get any thoughts from Kevin or Brian on that.
I get that.
Well,
go ahead, Kevin.
Go ahead, Brian.
First of all, the whole secondhand issue is obviously a huge deal. And when you think about secondhand and then preferential treatment in the workplace, it just doesn't make any sense. And you talk about vehicles and homes and everything else. I mean, there's I know of many people personally, and I've got to believe people on the phone do as well, of people who have lung cancer who never smoked, who never, you know, at all, or at least, you know, say they didn't, and I believe them. Now, there's other environmental factors that play into a lot of this, but it's very prevalent, and so that gets into the mix as well. So now we have innocent people put in situations where all of a sudden they're subjected to something that they don't want to deal with. And so that is a big deal. The second thing on the cessation piece, one of the other things we're doing right now, and we'll have a report later this year, and we've asked for some research to be done to take all the smoking cessation efforts that are out there and try to find outcome data as to which work and which don't. Because there's a lot of people have their own project and way of doing it, but we're really looking for evidence-based pieces so that we can then say, when we talk about smoking cessation, let's use these handful of programs or whatever the number ends up being, because we know they're most effective, and then we can continue to have data that we can put forth to show the benefit of those. But right now, when you talk about smoking cessation classes, I mean, it is a huge lifting of programs that are out there. So we're trying to provide everybody data on that.
2 points to add to that, Tom. One, when I got involved with the Alliance and we started looking at the research over the course of summer of 16, I was quite surprised to learn that a full 10% of all people, individuals that have lung cancer, have never smoked. And I certainly have no reason to attribute that to anything other than secondhand smoke, but maybe some other factors as well. But that was very surprising to me. And secondly, from a financial standpoint, it probably would make sense for the state of Indiana to offer some sort of tax credit or even cash reward for people who quit smoking, because research that was produced during the session earlier this year estimated that smoking-related illnesses cost the state of Indiana roughly $500 million a year in the Medicaid program. So smoking is a losing proposition. Unless you're in the business of selling tobacco products, it's a losing proposition for both employers and the state of Indiana from a financial perspective.
I recall, Kevin, that was some information that came out near the end of the legislative session this year about the impacts on the state.
Yeah, Medicaid program. And we wish it had come out earlier in the year, because we're trying to talk to some legislators about raising the tax, and they'd say, well, you're asking us to raise the tax on and if you're successful and it reduces the rate of smoking, then it will be a declining revenue source. And my message to those legislators was, you got to look at both sides of the ledger, both the revenue side and the expense side, because to the extent that it keeps folks from not starting or getting them to quit, then you're going to save even more money on the Medicaid program in state expenditures than you're going to lose in cigarette tax revenue.
Brian, you mentioned even in your opening remarks how kind of the immediate positive feedback you got from your colleagues in the healthcare industry about these efforts. You've talked about some of the town halls and other things, but how widespread has been that support, and what are some of the things you hear as you talk to people or speak to groups? What are some of the things that resonate about this effort that you hear from others?
Well, Tom, I've been stunned by the number of people that have called me and randomly want to get involved and said, you know, what can I do? And that has been from throughout the state. And the other thing is, we've always said, this alliance, we're not looking for any credit. We're not looking for any, you know, gold stars or anything. And we don't care if somebody else carries the baton. We're just trying to bring attention to this. So we reached out to the Lung Association, the Cancer Association, the Tobacco Free Kids, and just said, look, we're not here to step on anybody's stuff. We're just trying to make sure that we can work in cooperation and align the issues we've had. And so when I talk about the four we came up with, or you asked me about those four, if you looked at all the various things people are trying to do, they're long list of ideas of what we can do to change things. We just distilled it and said, can we all agree on these, you know, two, three, or four? And we got consistent support to say, yeah, those are the right ones to change things. And so we had that alignment there throughout the state. When we talk, the other thing is when we go talk to the mayors around the state and their association, you know, they're looking for ways in which they can provide more services locally to deal with these issues. And then I can also get into the opioid conversation related to this too. They're looking for support. The other thing is that there is a correlation of addictions between use of cigarettes and also opioids. I'm not saying it's directional. I'm not saying it's linear. I'm not saying it's 100%, but there are relationships there. And so we do realize that we're dealing with an addiction. So when you talk about support, I was really overwhelmed by how fast other people signed on, and whether that be other chambers, you know, other places in the state, or just local organizations when we would go have our town hall saying, hey, here's what we're trying to do as well. But again, a lot of those things are fragmented, and we're trying to get this into an overall initiative to try to make sure that we can monitor progress as well. But I've been very surprised.
A question for both of you, and we'll start with Kevin, but we've talked a lot about policy, and policy is very important in this area. But for the people listening today and for the companies, the organizations throughout the state, what are some of the things they can do to help make a difference in their workplaces or in their communities? But again, beyond with supporting the policy efforts, what are some of the other initiatives they can undertake to help out on a kind of a local level?
Well, I think to the extent that they can help drive the culture in the direction of non-smoking, prohibiting smoking on their premises, you know, they own that property and they can, you know, say what does or doesn't happen. On that property, I know the building where our offices are on years ago went to a smoke-free facility. Look at offering rewards and incentives, making smoking cessation programs and products available are probably the key things that come to my mind.
Brian, can I ask you that same question?
First of all, I think that's a very good list. I won't repeat it, but I agree with what Kevin says. But I think so much of this is education. You know, we continue to have more and more information related to all the downstream issues related to this. And this is a little bit repetitive, but we do know that the long-term cost of this, especially as we deal with heart disease, lung cancer, et cetera, or COPD, we do know that there's all kinds of ramifications, and we also know from a healthcare systems perspective, you know, when people have chronic illnesses of, you know, coronary heart failure or asthma or issues like that, a lot of those stem back to these types of issues, and so therefore we deal with these a long time, and those are huge drivers of our healthcare costs. So my point is I don't want to say this is some, you know, scientific sample, but in each of the places I've gone, I've asked people that have talked to me, you know, are you a smoker? Several people have said yes, and I said, do you want to continue to smoke? And they said, no, I don't. And that's just something that continues over and over again, and to me, that just tells me that people, this is the right time for us to continue to push these efforts. And therefore, back to, you know, what can happen in the workplace, I think it is, I mean, that we're open to having conversations, we're open to find educations, we're looking to provide help, we're looking to do anything we can, and if we can eliminate some of these barriers, especially related to the preferential treatment, I think that gives employers a better opportunity to try to, one, do things for their employees, retain their employees, which is tough right now. I mean, this is a low unemployment market, and that's good news for us, but at the same time, we're trying to retain people, and anything we can do here will further that initiative.
Tom, I would follow up on Brian's emphasis on education from a little bit different angle. There was a report that came out, I think it was this summer, that was discussed in one of our alliance meetings that was logical, but I hadn't really stopped to think about it. We know there's a fairly strong correlation between education levels and income levels. And in general, and this report emphasized that essentially better educated people have by and large quit smoking, but the lower educated folks and the lower income sectors of our population have not. And the tobacco companies have really targeted that group, the less educated, the less well-off, to continue to pump out their products, even to the point where there are more smoke shops and retail outlets where you can purchase tobacco products concentrated in low-income neighborhoods.
Brian, you mentioned the national healthcare rankings, the kind of prompted, again, your passion, your involvement in this. Let's broaden the picture a little bit. Can you share some of those numbers? My sense is I think I've seen they've improved a little bit in recent years, but we're still not doing very well compared to the rest of the states around the country. But I guess it's not surprising some of the indicators, the smoking rates and different things, we fare poorly. Thus, fare poorly in the outcomes, some of the things you've mentioned. But can you share a few more of those numbers and just how poor Indiana is doing compared to other states?
Sure, Tom. Let me start with just overall health, you know, as these things come out. And there's a lot of data that comes out each year that we all do believe is credible. I wish I could say we just discredit and we're not that bad, but that's not the case. The interesting thing that I would say is that when we started this 2 years ago, the number I had for our overall health compared to everybody else was we were 41st. So one being good, 50 being the worst, we were 41st. I will say the most recent data has us 39th, but we who are doing this look at each other, we don't know why it moved. You know, so it's kind of a shock that it moves. And you can't find people say, well, we did this and that caused that. So if it comes out in the next report and we're 44th, we would be as well just equally surprised. But we don't feel like we've got an initiative in place to do that. But you start going through other pieces of it, and I mentioned a couple of them earlier that I'll reemphasize, which is our rate of lung cancer, our rate of heart disease. We're in the bottom 40 as well on those. So that all kind of plays in. You get into things related to infant mortality that's tied to all this as well. We're 43rd. You get into something that you talked about, preventable hospitalizations, you know, that we can do things ambulatory that people don't need to be admitted, obviously for cheaper costs, we're 41st there. And the bottom line is that as you go through these reports, you're trying to find some glimmer of hope, and it's not there. And so we're safely 35th or higher than in any health metric that I've seen, and we continue to monitor. But kind of getting back to where we started, so many of these things are related to smoking. It's again why we said if we can address this one, we can at least start to change the curve because it's pervasive in so many others.
Tom, the Indiana Chamber has put out Indiana Vision 2025 to put a stake in the ground to say we don't want to be average. We want to be a superior state in those four driver areas. But when it comes to smoking, I would take average as a starting point, because if our smoking rate was just at the U.S. average, we would be saving many lives and saving businesses and the state of Indiana billions of dollars every year. So in this case, you know, it might be okay, at least as a starting point, just to become average.
Yeah, we usually don't wave the flag for average, but I totally understand what you're saying, Kevin. We got to get somewhere. We got to make some progress, and then continue it beyond that.
Yeah, average may be a good intermediate goal.
And you know, one of the other ones I would also point out would be this whole obesity thing that we know we've got to address, and we've had some initiatives related to childhood obesity. We know we need to do more there. But again, the difference in those and something like smoking is the benefit takes a lot longer to realize than the smoking piece of it. And that's why, you know, again, we said smoking was first, but the childhood obesity would be one of the ones we would put right behind infant mortality. And then also one that I probably should have said earlier is just the rate of mothers or pregnant women who smoke during pregnancy. And so that's another number that we're very high and that we have to continue to look at, because that has all kinds of repercussions as well.
Kevin, you've mentioned Indiana Vision 2025 a couple of times, but I guess what struck me this year when the report card came out, it's just that stark contrast between how well Indiana's doing under those business climate goals in everything. There's 13 goals under that area.
Right.
We're doing pretty well in about 10 of them. Then you get down to the healthcare goals related to smoking, obesity, and healthcare costs. Just that dramatic difference in the impact that can have.
Well, it is dramatic. And when I talk to members of the chamber who have facilities in multiple states, they consistently tell us that Indiana is their highest healthcare cost state, and certainly much of that is related to our rates of smoking and obesity.
We've got about 10 minutes remaining. Again, anyone listening in who wants a question or comment, simply hit 01. Brian, I'd ask you, again, take the discussion a little bit broader. We've talked a lot about the smoking. You've mentioned some of the other priorities. Talk about next steps for the Alliance, again, kind of what the focus is as we get ready for 2018.
One of the things that's top of our list is somewhat of a continuation. I'm sure I wasn't on the call with Jim McClellan, but the whole opioid piece of it is front and center with us as well. And in that area, you know, it's multifaceted. There's a lot of conversation about what do we do to change, you know, prescribing habits and make sure that people don't become addicted. What can we do for education there as well on what's addictive and what's not? I mean, for a long time, people were led to believe some of the drugs that they were prescribing weren't addictive, and obviously that turned out to be wrong. So there's a lot on the prevention piece, but at the same time we have prevention piece, we also have, you know, people who are actively needing assistance. And on that piece of it, you know, it's how do we, especially as healthcare providers in partnership with a variety of other people, work on having a better system whereby people know how to access the system, navigate the system, find treatment, have this be coordinated. Because this has hit all of us pretty quickly, and I would say right now, I don't believe we have the best, quote, system in place to deal with the demand, nor
have we really identified what the capacity is in the system. So some of the work to be done is we're trying to figure out, okay, what is the health delivery system in order to address this as people present to us. Another one I mentioned a second ago was the, I would say on the infant mortality piece, it is a lot of education related to the mothers, but we also have, back to my prior point, a dramatic increase of the mothers who are pregnant with an addictions issue, largely from opioids. And we, in our organization, we see those in our urban OB units. We see them also in our suburban. I mean, so this is not something you can stereotype and say, it's this demographic where that's occurring. No, the rates are sharply increasing everywhere. So part of what we're doing is trying to make sure that people know that we're here to help them deliver a baby, to get them, they and their baby, you know, off the addiction, and to accept them as somebody that we're going to welcome with open arms to deal with that, because, again, a lot of people are embarrassed or ashamed to tell you what the issues are, but what we do know is back to healthcare costs, that child being born with an addiction, that's at a very expensive additional person to our healthcare system. So there's a whole lot of resource going on there to try to address that piece of it. And then the childhood obesity piece, I mean, we've had a lot of conversations. I'm sure some of the people involved have been involved with our jump in for initiative that's been going on for a few years. We still have a very sedentary group of young people that aren't, you know, getting a lot of the things that they need to have, and we've got a number of things that we have to do, and to do those in cooperation with our school systems. So those are a few of them, Tom.
When we look at these challenges, there's not really geographic lines here, are there? Are the impacts pretty much felt throughout the state and rural, urban, all types of areas?
My best response there is that as I deal with my peers in the hospital association, or we deal with the state medical association and they talk about their peers, we can't find anybody who's saying, hey, that doesn't apply to me.
All right. Kevin, your thoughts as we prepare to move forward, again, the efforts over the past year, a lot of progress made as far as that education piece, certainly more to do, but your thoughts as we look ahead to 2018?
We've had acknowledgement from key leaders, fiscal leaders, governor's office, governor himself, that raising the tobacco tax substantially would reduce the incidence of smoking and create a higher barrier of entry for young people to help keep them from ever starting. I think there's a kind of a desire to hold that tax increase and the $300-400 million a year that would bring in, put that on hold, partly to see what's going to happen with federal Medicaid and the Healthy Indiana Plan HIP 2.0 program. But I think there's a recognition that for a variety of reasons, some fiscal, some health-related, which is our main objective, that this is going to need to be done, but it may have to wait. I think we keep making the case throughout the 18 session, but acknowledge that it may have to wait till 2019. I'm optimistic that seeing additional states enact T21 may help cause a wave across the country, and that's certainly something that we need to continue to educate individual legislators on the importance and how impactful that could be to keeping many, many young people from ever starting smoking and then getting caught up in that cycle of, I want to quit, but I'm so physically addicted that I am struggling to accomplish that.
Brian, I'll let you have the final word and wrap up here. Your thoughts?
Well, My final words are, I hope the people on the phone found this, A, educational. At the same time, if there's ideas, we're open to all ideas. And, you know, our commitment is that we're going to continue to work on this to improve the overall healthiness of the citizens of our state. We knew when we went in, it was not going to be a short win. But we are committed. We've got a bunch of people that are committed. And if you were to attend our monthly meetings, you'd be surprised at the level of participation and the ideas that we have and our ability to try to distill this, like last year, into four initiatives, or we're going forward three initiatives. That being said, we're also not trying to be rebels. You know, we're not trying to be antagonistic with the state. We want to work with the governor's office or Jim McClellan as well in the things that we're doing. We want to work definitely with business and make sure we're doing things that are that help our state. It's fabulous when you look at the information you talked about us being a pro-business state. I just worry as a healthcare provider, you know, we don't want to be the Achilles heel that all of a sudden trumps all that or throws water on that as other people are considering coming to the state for business. Any businesses here. So we believe that this initiative is good for our citizens. We also believe it's good for our state, and we're going to continue to work in cooperation with others to hopefully achieve that.
Excellent. Brian Mills and Kevin Brenniger, thank you so much for talking to our members today and for all your efforts in this important area.
Pleasure.
Thank
Pleasure
you
to be here.
Very much, Brian.
All right, a couple of notes before we close. We hope to see many of you on the phone at the Indiana Chamber's annual awards dinner on Tuesday of next week.
See them on the phone?
Well, they're on the phone today.
Oh.
We'll see them next week. Okay. So I may have mixed my words up there. Thanks for keeping me straight. But we'll see many next Tuesday among the 2,000 or so friends and guests who will be at our annual awards dinner. Couple other events, chamber events coming up. Our Indiana Chamber Legislative Preview will take place November 20th. Not only hear about chamber priorities, but we'll have the caucus leaders engaging in a panel discussion. That'll be followed on December 1st by the second Technology and Innovation Policy Summit, where we'll focus in on some key technology initiatives that'll be before the General Assembly. We'll include all that information in a follow-up email, as well as information on the Alliance and the town hall meeting coming up next week in Indianapolis regarding the age 21 smoking age. Again, thank you, Chamber members, for listening in today and for your support. Have a wonderful Friday and weekend.
Thank you all for your attention. This concludes today's conference call. All participants may now disconnect.